I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
The Jeff Blair Show just got 100% more brunt. This is the Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Eric Brandeo, our technical director, says, who better to play than the angry white guy's mascot, Ted Nugent? That's very true. The conscience of the Republican, part of the conscience of the Republican Party.
He's a moderate Nugent. Right now, I think.
Yeah, he is.
Isn't he kind of in this, isn't he a centrist now in the new Republican Party?
Yeah, I think he's like a John Kasich guy, right? Compared to some of the other loons out there. I watched that debate last night, very disappointed in it. The theatrics were dull. Just not that good.
I can't do it anymore. I'm,
oh, come on.
No, I can't. It's depressing.
Well, I watch just to see if Donald Trump will ever speak in a complete sentence. He came close in two occasions last night. He actually had start, middle, end, period. Very close. Very close to a complete sentence.
There's not one person who supports him who cares about that.
Well, no, of course
not. One.
No, because he's...
Or about anything anyone says about him, or no. Anyway, that's... No. We are in...
It's
a
good fun. We're
going to
be down...
A strange time.
You know what? We're going to be down in Florida.
For the Florida primary.
For the Florida primary. And you know what we should do Tuesday night? We should, as reporters, we should try to get into a Trump party.
Well, at least no one will try and beat us up.
Yeah, well, we're white, so
exactly.
We're okay.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you,
white and a little overweight, so we fit the demographic.
No, I was down there, right, the week, and I'll tell you, the amount of
Trump... By the way, I'm serious about wanting to go to a Trump party.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, but...
Travis, would you be up? Or Travis might get beaten up because of the hair. He might get beaten
does
up.
Does look a little...
He looks a little metro, little, you know.
But man, there's a lot of Trump stuff around. Where we are in Florida, that delightful Dunedin and all of that, there was a lot of Trumpiage on bumpers and the... back windows of cars and on people's lawns.
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
Yes.
So, anyway.
It'll be good fun.
I'm sure the world's not going to end.
No.
Hey,
maybe.
I have to say this.
There he is.
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit
there
my hands.
Go.
I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands.
Look at those hands.
You know, I remember, see, I...
And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it.
The short-fingered vulgarian, as Spy magazine used to refer to him back in the day in the 80s. And, you know, I see, when I was covering boxing a lot in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was the guy, right? He was...
Sure.
And in Atlantic City, he was bringing on stuff. And I'll never forget one of my favorite moments during a rather surreal phase with Tyson, when I was kind of following Tyson around through all those fights. It was before the Spinks fight, so the biggest fight ever, you know, to that point, and was in, and they had the press conference, and Tyson was married to Robin Givens.
Yeah.
And all of that Robin Givens stuff was starting to happen, right, with the mother, and it was before the Barbara Walters interview, and
right.
really, but there was clearly some issues, and there was a lot of things being written about Robin Givens suggesting she was a gold digger and that her mother was behind it all, and her marriage to Mike Tyson's a mystery to us all. But anyway,
yes.
and they had a press conference in the the showroom of the Trump Plaza Hotel, which is as vulgar as you know as you would imagine,
yes.
right? Imagine a 1980s Atlantic City casino showroom. Yeah, it was very very glamorous. And Trump got up and made his speech, and decided to He wanted to clear things up, and he pointed those little stubby fingers. And Robin Givens was sitting with her mother in a bunkette,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he said, "I just want everybody here to know." And he points at her that Robin Givens is a quality lady. And that's to me, that's Trump, right? There he is in his
Trumpness.
Trumpness. But he was harmless then, right? He was just a guy that was bankrupting casinos in those days. Yeah. He was not, you know, he hurt people,
bulldozing
jobs.
Bulldozing little old ladies' houses.
Yeah, throwing little old ladies out of their houses, exactly. Building casinos, bankrupting the casinos, failing at various businesses. But he was just kind of a cartoon character, right? And in boxing, man, cartoon characters, they're pushing each other out of the spotlight all the time. There's one guy replaces another one. No one took him seriously.
It's always amazed me in the United States how guys who are, I mean, essentially he's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what he is. He's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Mm-hmm. You know, boom, hit the jackpot.
Yes.
And great American success story. Not really.
No. Not really. Pretty much dad made the dough.
And, you know, dad made the money and Junior was just smart enough not to completely blow it all. But anyhow, we should
anyway, it will be an interesting week down there next week. And plus there's baseball going on. So I look forward to it.
I'm gonna get Barker and see if Barker will accompany me to he's joining us, by the way. Maybe he'll want to go to a Trump rally.
I haven't talked to him about this election, which is probably we started down that road with Gibby when you and I were down there, but that's he's not a Trump supporter though. That's no, good to hear that.
Well, I mean,
I know
he's a Ted Cruz guy. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how much better.
I don't want to out
is.
Him, but yeah,
I don't know how much better.
I love is. Gibby in every way except politically.
I think Barker's probably more, believe it or not, of a Marco Rubio guy. Mm. I think he's more of a Marco Rubio guy. I know this. He's not a Hillary guy.
Yeah, that's pretty shocking.
Anyhow, what'd you make of? He'll join us in a few minutes, and we'll sabotage him by asking him about politics. We'll do that.
Just right off the top.
Nobody tell Barker. We're going to ask him about politics right off the top. What'd you make of all the Goose Gossage stuff?
Well,
it was good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's good fun to a point. You know, you have been around baseball long enough, and I've been around baseball.
The Latino thing was third rail stuff.
Well, it's like dog whistle stuff, right? You know, Jose Bautista as representative of Latinos, you know, with quotation marks, which is like being representative of Caucasians, right? There's, you know, and that would be the fiery Latino temperament, you know. Mm-hmm. All of those, you know, every cliche is going to fly out there, every racist cliche is going to fly out there. So yeah, that's what that was about. But you know, angry old guys in baseball, or angry guys in baseball, you know, it's been a theme for as long as I can remember, walking into clubhouses with guys who kind of, you know, looked like Goose Gossage, who were chewing tobacco and seemed angry about something.
Jack Morris could be angry about stuff.
Oh, yeah. Doyle Alexander's the one I remember. Man, he was the most sour human being.
Doyle Alexander.
You know, and they impose it. Those guys, they're like, you know, dictators in clubhouses, right? They impose their sourness on the room. They, you know, boy, far be it for some young guy to pipe up and say something, because that's not the way you do it in the big leagues, son. Right. You know, you got to be miserable. And, you know, again, I'm sensitive because guys in our business often took the flack for that.
Right.
We were the object or the subject of their kind of misplaced. Yeah. Well, we're everything, right? We weren't them.
Yeah.
But that whole, you know, the angry baseball guy, not, you know, people aren't doing it right. Every code word, it's games being taken over by nerds. Bryce Harper's not very good, you know.
I couldn't have gotten away with that in my day, even though I've linked on Twitter to a picture of footage of Kirk Gibson taking him deep and blowing kisses as he goes around third base.
I think Reggie kind of styled a bit when he hit those home runs in the World Series, didn't he?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I can remember. I remember Felipe sitting in Felipe Alou's office one time at Yankee Stadium, an interleague game, and Reggie was there for Old Timers Day, and Reggie showed up, and I didn't know this, but apparently Reggie and Felipe, they were roommates for a little bit in spring training. So Reggie just sat down, and I remember Felipe looking at Reggie and saying, "This was the only man people would throw at for striking out." Because if you remember when Reggie struck out, he just didn't strike out. He'd corkscrew and the whole thing, and pitchers would get pissed off even if they struck him out, because how dare you, like, go down like that, you know? And Felipe said, this is the man that people used to throw at after they'd struck him out, because that's the way he was.
You know, and then the amphetamine. You think he ever encountered one just haphazardly, you know, just by, you know, he said, what's that pill you're taking, buddy? You know? It's, you know, day game after night game. You know, geez, we're all kind of hungover. What are you taking there?
Yeah.
Those guys, the glass houses old ball players live in terms of drugs, they none of them should say anything.
No.
None of them should say anything. No. Just shut up about it. You know, it's just, different drugs.
Yeah.
It's not no drugs. It's different drugs.
Guys have been looking for competitive edges forever.
Well, I believe since the Greeks invented the whole Olympic thing, yeah. Right? They used to do all kinds of weird stuff. But those guys especially, they know the culture that they were part of. Mm-hmm. And there's no difference, right? Yeah. But the anger and the resentment, the kind of tamping down the joy, I'm an old enough guy that I get uncomfortable if I think something has been premeditated and choreographed. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes out there and I think, man, this guy was practicing this in front of a mirror.
Yeah.
You know, and it's game 14 against Tampa on a Tuesday night and there's 12,000 people there. Yeah. To me, that's Detroit, right? But a guy hitting what turns into a game-winning home run in front of 50,000 people at the end of the most weird and wonderful inning any of us will ever remember in a city starved for somebody to win something, you know, that made your mom jump up and down. Jose Bautista flipping the bat, I'm cool with that. He did it.
You know, and to put it in further context, take a look at Jose Bautista's career. I mean, everything he'd gone through to that point, being on waivers, being a guy that, you know, nobody thought he'd be a regular player. The guy the Baltimore Orioles looked at and said, this guy will never be a player. He'll never be an everyday player. And there was a lot that went into that. But I don't like the choreographed stuff. Again, I think there's a time and place for everything. But guys showing unrestrained joy when they hit a home run, I have no problem with that. As long as you're going to give me a fair effort, as long as you're not going to diss the crowd, you know, I have more. I'll tell you what, if Goose Gossage wants to get upset about something, the thing that's upset me more than anything else the past couple of years is when Jonathan Papelbon walked off in Philadelphia and grabbed his crotch in the direction of the crowd. Don't disrespect the fans. You can do anything else other than that.
No, I thought the Bautista thing was as pure as anything I've seen. You know, it was pure. And if you like sports, you know, if you're why are you watching if you don't want to see that? You know, look, if I'm a Texas fan, I don't like it much. But, you know, and if it had happened the other way around, there would be people grumbling here about it a little bit. But that's about losing, right? That's about the other set of emotions. Mm-hmm. But look, if you've ever played a game in your life, you know, and like most of us were hopeless at it, but you had, you know, just trying to imagine the one moment when it kind of worked out for you. You know, when you scored a goal in a hockey game or you hit a home run in a little league game or something, right? Or some, you know, or you hit a buzzer beater in a basketball game once in your life. You know, that, think of what that felt like. And it's the same for him. You know, everybody gets that. Everybody understood. You're right. There's a lot of other stuff bottled up in Jose Bautista that, you know, kind of comes out as anger or resentment or chip on the shoulder and all that stuff. And that was part of it too. But everybody who's ever played a game and anyone who's ever watched a game for entertainment knows what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, Don Cherry goes on Saturday nights and says, look at Bobby Orr. He skated, scored the greatest goal in history and skated to the bench with his head down. That was Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
I don't think everybody has to be Bobby Orr.
No.
I don't think that's better than this.
No.
It's different, but it's not better.
Yeah. And there's... Again, it's to me, it's about there's a context for everything. People react differently. To me, there's no right or wrong way. There's no perfect way to act. As long as you're not disrespecting the crowd, as long as you're not disrespecting the paying customers, and as long as you have you're kind of maintaining a sense of your own pride, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Like, I would rather it wasn't a brand building exercise for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather that they weren't kind of looking for their poster moment. I know that's part of the world, but it's not my cup of tea.
No.
But that's not what this was.
No.
You know?
No, and Goose's other stuff, going off about bringing in Cam Newton. I mean, it was just angry old professional athlete, I think. Do we have Mr. Barker there? Oh, Travis is chatting with him. That will be another hour and a half. Is he ready? Travis, you're going to see him tomorrow. Mr. Barker.
Grumpy, what's up?
Grumpy. I'm not grumpy. Hey, I got a question for you.
What's happening?
Brent and I are going to go to a Donald Trump rally on Tuesday night in Florida because we're down there. Are you going to come with us?
No.
Okay, there you go.
No, I watched the debate last night. I can watch about 4 minutes of that, and then I have to turn it.
Your boy Marco needs a comeback.
He does. It's not looking good for everybody but Trump.
No, indeed it isn't.
No, it is not. How's it going?
How's who going?
You guys. How you guys doing?
We're okay. We're just, Goose Gossage hasn't criticized us today, so things good. Did you hear all that stuff?
I did. Me and Mike Wilner had about a three-inning conversation about that, and we had Ben Nicholson-Smith up, and he talked about that, what Jose Bautista had said about that, and basically Jose Bautista took the high road. He didn't want to say a whole lot. It's the times have changed. Goose has, I think, earned the right to say what he wants to say. The only issue I had with the whole thing was when he personalized it. He's starting to mention guys' names out loud. I just think that's too far. And, I'm as old school as they get. I get it that's the way he used to play. Well, that's not the way they play the game now. It's changed. And, it's too bad that the faces of baseball, Goose is a face of baseball, I think needs to step back and accept this is the way it is. And, we're trying to get everybody involved in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You want that person to be their self, and you want that person to have fun at baseball. And I'm going to tell you right now, you ask anybody in Canada, the bat flip is iconic, and it always will be iconic. So, it's one person's opinion. It's not everybody's opinion. And hopefully it dies down and doesn't turn into too much more than it is now.
Yeah, and the other thing, Kevin, is, I think Goose played with some pretty flamboyant guys, and think of that Bronx Zoo crowd and, Reggie in particular. There, it wasn't like those guys were shrinking violets on the field. Even, Reggie, Blair and I were just talking about this. Reggie certainly wasn't above styling in the batter's box. So, the notion that everybody in those days was kind of buttoned down and now the kids are taking over, I think that's kind of, I think he's having some memory slippage there because that was a pretty flash time in baseball, the 1970s.
Yeah, it's just it's funny that he didn't mention that I'm aware of. He didn't mention a pitcher. I mean, you're seeing guys. I'm not going to name names, but you see certain guys shooting arrows after they save a baseball game. Well, what's different than that than flipping a baseball bat? It's it's all about being an individual now. That's the way baseball is, whether you like it or not. If you want to watch baseball, that's just part of it. And, it gets back to me being an old school guy. I am. I was when I played, you had to go and take the second baseman out. Well, you can't do that anymore. That's just the way it is. And, hey, this is the way I look at it. If you don't want to see a bat flip, don't give up a home run. That's basically what it comes down to. And it is what it is. I think it's one guy's opinion. It's not everybody's opinion. And again, I think it's going to move on. I will say this. This is the first time I'm very proud of Jose Bautista for taking the high road. Because, we all know how he is and how Jose likes to sort of stir the fire a little bit. Well, he didn't. And to me, that's very impressive. That means it's getting closer to the season, and now it's all about winning. And I've been here the last 5 days. I've been all around the baseball field. I've been all around the batting cage, and that's what it's all about here. It's all about winning. What can I do to help this team win? And I think we saw that with Jose with the whole Goose thing.
Do you think, Kevin, that the Blue Jays are getting or have a reputation around baseball?
The bat flips and well, sure.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, me personally, I think to win in baseball nowadays, you have to have some sort of attitude. You have to have some sort of identity. And, mm-hmm. The Blue Jays now, all of a sudden, I've said this on your show and my show and our show and everybody else's show that I go on. Now, when people come in to play the Blue Jays, they're afraid to come here with the Donaldsons and the Bautistas. And it's no more throwing fastballs in and not having consequences for that. So, yeah, you have to have a little attitude. And to play in the American League East and play in all these, the Red Sox and Baltimore, and we all know how tough that is. Yeah, that's the part of baseball, is that around the league, some people don't like the Blue Jays. So what? You know why? You know what that says to me? That the Blue Jays all of a sudden are really, really good. And now people are a little bit afraid to come in and play the Blue Jays. That's the way it should be. You shouldn't be a little afraid. When I played with the Blue Jays, nobody cared because we were awful. But now they're not. So, yeah, it's, you know, I like it. I think I'm a big fan of having your own identity and, you know, playing the game the way you want to play it. Go out the way if you want to throw a bat and you want to hit a home run and show everybody you did it, hey, that's the way you are. I got no issues with that.
Well, you know, and Barkas, you know, as much as we're talking about Bautista, you know, to me, the face and the kind of attitude of this team is embodied in Josh Donaldson. And he's a
100%.
Guy. Yeah. And he's a cocky guy. He talks. If you're playing against him, you hate him. The Jays guys, when he was in Oakland, they hated him. Some of his teammates in places, he's rubbed them the wrong way. But I'll tell you, you know, he's incredibly good, incredibly competitive. And if you want to shut him up, you better beat him. And that's, 100%. And I think that's kind of, that's the, you know, if you want to look at that, you know, there's guys, you know, Troy Tulowitzki is a different kind of person, but the one consistent element in this team, and I think it's a good thing, is that idea of, well, you know, you don't like us, beat us. And we'll, you know, see what happens.
Exactly right. Well, you know, to further that, yesterday Josh Donaldson got a hit with second and third and drove in two runs, and he had a little bit of a bat flip. It was a little bit of an attitude saying, even in spring training, you know, everybody, Mike yesterday was saying the 8-1-1 record in spring training doesn't matter. Well, we had Chris Colabello on the show 2 days ago, and all he was talking about is you never can win too much. Winning is contagious, and it starts with your leaders. It starts with the guy you just mentioned. It starts with Jose. Again, it gets back to that. 3 weeks ago, Jose would have probably said something about this little goose thing. He took the high road. It's because you're getting closer to when the bell rings. People are trying to get their stuff straight. They want to get to winning, which is now all of a sudden the Blue Jays way. And again, it starts with all of these other guys. It's nice. I'm going to say that right now. It's very nice to watch this team. You know, Josh Donaldson and Russell Martin, the first day I got here, I'm standing and watching them stretch. Josh Donaldson walks out with this little boombox in his back pocket with music playing, and him and Russell are having a dance-off. And it was awesome. They were all, everybody was, you know, having a great time during stretch. And then when the bell rang and they had to go to their sessions to go and play defense, which, you know, this team's always been a three-run homer team, not much on defense. They went to their defensive sessions and it's like the light switch went on. Now it's time to get serious. Let's get the job done. Throw to the right bases, catch all the right balls, throw strike one and go up and hopefully get the big hit, hitting the three-run homer. So, yeah. It's changed. The culture here has changed. It's all about winning. And I got to be honest with you, it's a breath of fresh air to watch.
You've been down there for 5 days. As you say, you've been around. I know that you go to all the different drills. You make it a point of actually seeing things as opposed to talking about stuff you don't see. What's impressed you the most?
Well, there's Jeff, man. You know, I was sitting here last night trying to think about what would be the one thing. The first thing is this is a fastball hitting organization. It's not only 1-25 on that roster. They crushed the fastball. Aroldis Chapman came in the game yesterday flipping sliders. Mm-hmm. Now, last time I checked, he's upwards of 100. He's flipping sliders. They beat fastballs all over the place. That's the first thing. Russell Martin was one of the most impressive people I've seen. I shook his hand. He's in some kind of shape. He's in mid-season form behind the plate. No offense to Josh Tolley or Tony Sanchez. He's that much further above everybody else. The way he calls a game just looks different. Mm-hmm. The way he catches games, the way he keeps people from running on the bases. You could go on and on about him. R.A. Dickey looks in tremendous shape. You say he throws a knuckleball. Well, talk to Josh Tolley. He's saying he's going to use his fastball more because he's lighter on his feet. He wants to get ahead, and he wants to be more efficient, meaning he wants to go deeper in games.
Buck Martinez, so, yeah. I'm just going to tell you, Buck pointed out when I asked him this question this morning, and that was one of the things he pointed out. That's exactly one of the things he pointed out, is he said, you know, R.A. Dickey in the past has been a bit of a slow starter. He really gets a sense that his focus is on getting out to a good start this year.
It is. Well, you know, the first thing I asked Josh Tolley, I said, hey, what's the difference? He lost the 14 pounds, you can tell. He mm-hmm. looks thinner. He looks better shape. He looks happier. Be quite frankly, he looks happier. But I asked Josh, I said, what's the big deal about that? Does it make the knuckleball come out any harder? Because, you know, R.A.'s a little bit harder thrower with the knuckleball. He's going to make that thing harder. He puts forth more energy. First thing out of his mouth was, is his fastball's coming out of his hand more. And I sort of raised up and was like, why does that matter? He's like, well, he wants to be more efficient. It gets back to the point you just made. When, you know, you're off to a slow start, how do you go against that? You do something you're not used to doing. You may throw a pitch that you're not used to throwing. And the shape that he's in, I think, is going to help him tremendously. Pat Venditti, I saw yesterday, is a – man, that is something. When I watched him even warm up between innings and he's flipping a six-finger glove from one hand to the other and he's flipping it three-quarters and he's flipping it sidearm and he's going straight over top and he's doing it with both hands. I saw him throw to a left-hander. I saw him throw to two right-handers. Jeff, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's upwards of probably right in that 87 range, but he's throwing strikes. And if he can do anything, that's basically two pitchers in one guy. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of a good thing. And, you know, again, it gets back to everybody here wants to win, and it starts with defense and strike one. That's, you know, again, it gets back – the three-run homer's sexy, and they're going to hit a bunch of three-run homers. But the way they catch the ball – and the way they're throwing strike one is you can't say enough about Brooke Jacoby, Eric Owens, Pete Walker. You can't say enough about those guys, the job they've done, and instilled that and beat that in their head. That's every day in stretch they say the same thing over and over. Let's break on throwing strike one. When's the last time you heard that, Jeff? You haven't, and no. That's pretty impressive.
It's hard to be. The things have been going swimmingly down there. They're winning Grapefruit League games like crazy. Everybody is healthy. But give me one, just for a flip side here, Kevin. What would be your one cause or two causes for concern when you look at this team heading into the season?
Well, obviously it's going to be the starting rotation. Jay Happ is the one guy that I saw him throw 2 days ago against Tampa Bay. You know, you can say what you want. When you sign 3-year, $36 million, it's different. You're expected to do a little bit more than – did if you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, sometimes he gets to me like he tries to be a little bit too fine when he gets ahead. You know, sometimes you just want him to grab the baseball and get a guy out. He's facing Tampa Bay now. They're running their A lineup out there, Tampa Bay, I guess you could call it that. And you know, I think he threw almost 50 pitches in three innings. To me, I want more. I want to see this guy grab the ball and just get after it one time. You know, It's all fine and dandy that you're throwing the ball down and away and you get ahead. What do you do when you get ahead? So I went up to the great Pat Hinken and I said, what do you do when you get ahead 0-2, 1-2? He said, well, usually that means you can waste the pitch. That means you can bounce the ball in the dirt. You can go up and away out of the strike zone. Then when it gets 2-2 or higher, you want to show them your best pitch.
Mm-hmm.
With Jay Happ, I just don't see that right now, and mm-hmm. I want to see more. Hopefully that gets better the later spring goes, but he's the one guy to me that has to be that Marco Estrada of 2016. If he can do that, this team's going to go where they need to go.
Yeah, you know, when you the J-Hop you just described, though, is very reminiscent of J-Hop in his first incarnation as a Blue Jay, right? That was the frustrating part about him then.
100%. Well, you know what he does? He sort of reminds you of Drew Hutchison. I saw Drew Hutchison pitch yesterday. They're basically the same guy, except one's right-handed, one's left-handed, and their stuff is off the charts. About Jay Happ, I walked up because, you know, he elevates the baseball all the time, and he basically throws it by people at 93, and I walked up to guys like a Colabella, like a Goins, Pilar. I asked all of these guys, Tolley. I asked these guys, why does he do that? And they said he throws a heavy ball, meaning it comes out of his hand late, and then it gets on you in a hurry, and when you swing at it, and even when you put it in play, it's like hitting a bowling ball. Well, I want to see more of that. When you get 0-2, 1-2, how did you get 0-2, 1-2? Use that pitch. Try to be efficient. That's what it's all about. Getting deeper in games. If they can do that, man, it's going to be impressive. But Jay Happ, I want to see more. I do. I want more. And hopefully he can give the Blue Jays what they need.
All right, you know what time it is. Hey, Barker, it's by popular demand.
What time is it?
Bundesliga picks. We're going to get a couple.
Oh, yes.
We're going to get a couple of these suckers done, okay?
Nice.
Brent, you don't have a problem with this, do you?
No, it's my favorite part of the show.
All right.
Awesome.
I know that you've been reading Kicker, the German soccer magazine. I know that, so I know you're well prepared for this. So I'll just pick a couple of games here. The first one, big one today, Hertha Berlin against FC Schalke 04. Who you got in that?
Well, usually when they have a number on the end, they're not very good. So what's the first one?
Hertha Berlin.
Hertha Berlin, I'm going to 2-0.
Okay. Don't forget.
Will you can close or no?
You can have draws in soccer. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that's not. Who wants to tie, dude?
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Really? Come on.
All right.
You're better than that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. TSG 1899 Hoffenheim against VfL Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg's where they make Volkswagen, by the way.
Nice green.
Yeah,
uniform.
I don't like Volkswagen, so I'm going to go with the first one. I'm not even going to attempt to say the first one.
You don't like Volkswagen? Okay.
Yeah, I don't like Volkswagen, so I'm going to go... I'm going to go 3-1.
3-1. All right. VfB Stuttgart.
You didn't like that one. That wasn't good?
No, that's not a good one. VfB Stuttgart against FC Ingolstadt 04. Now, you got to be careful here. I wouldn't be taken away by the hole when they have a number after them. They suck.
What's the second one again?
FC Ingolstadt 04.
FC Ingolstadt. I'm going to go 1-0.
There you go. Perfect. 1-0. That's not bad. Borussia Mönchengladbach against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yes.
Man, against, that was good.
That was pretty close.
I'm going to go 3-2.
3-2 for who?
For the guy I just said.
Okay. All right.
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Okay.
I wasn't even close there. But
well, that's close. Yeah. And this one is going to be an easy one for you. Bayer 04 Leverkusen against Hamburger SV. I know where you're going.
Well, I mean, I love hamburgers. So I'm going to go hamburger.
All right. Very good. Mr. Barker.
I'll do hamburger. I don't think they're – oh, they're good, though, hamburger. I'm going to go 2-0.
2-0. All right. There you go. Mr. Barker.
I can see Brunt right now laughing at me.
No, Brunt's
laughing with you.
No, Brunt's not laughing at you. We're just impressed that you managed to make it through Borussia Mönchengladbach without swearing. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Mr. Barker?
Well, my son's here. I can't do that in front of him.
All right. We're going to let you scoot. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll look forward to seeing you in the weekend.
Yeah, we'll see you.
See you, Kevin.
See you guys.
Take care. So that's Kevin Barker. By popular demand, the Bundesliga picks.
That kid, man. See, the young Barker spawn was there.
Yes.
Listening to this.
Yes. And he's...
damaged for life, I think, probably.
I don't know. By the way, at the spur of the moment. So we appreciate Kevin doing that. Joel Corey is a former NFL scout. He is now an NFL contract and salary cap writer for CBS Sports and the National Football Post. And lots of strange goings on in NFL free agency. Apparently, someone needs to still notify the Cleveland Browns that free agency has started. Joel Corey will join us when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Moussia Brunden Gladbach.
For guys, size matters. But bigger is definitely not better for guys with overdeveloped breasts. The condition is called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. Dr. Lista is a world-renowned plastic surgeon who has perfected the procedure that corrects gynecomastia with virtually no scarring. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and size up your options for downsizing male breasts. theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. So again, if you missed it, Barker's Bundesliga picks. I tweeted them out. Hertha Berlin 2-0, Hoffenheim 3-1, Ingolstadt 1-0, and Borussia Mönchengladbach 3-2.
You parlay those, man. You make a fortune.
You do. And people are going to laugh, but actually people have bet on some of his things.
Based on what Barker does?
Well, they've claimed they have. Billy Papacosta claims he does all the time, and he claims that he makes money on it. So I don't know. I do know that Barker does have a copy. He does buy Der Kicker magazine and gets Hazel to interpret to translate for him. Anyhow, there you go. So Barker's Bundesliga picks. And yes, we will make them a regular part of Baseball Central. NFL free agency is, well, it's ongoing, obviously, except in Cleveland, it appears. A lot of strange happenings. I don't quite understand what the Miami Dolphins are doing. I get the impression I'm not the only person. I'm a little concerned about what the Denver Broncos are doing. But it's become... I don't know, Stephen. It's one of the most interesting free agent periods just for a variety of reasons. And some puzzling moves being made by teams.
Well, yeah. Starting with the Super Bowl champions and who at this moment don't have a quarterback.
Or running back.
Yeah. We'll see that offer sheet anyway, but they probably won't be able to match that. But, and the sudden return to prominence of two guys who have been widely written off in Kaepernick and Griffin, right? Who were sensations 3 years ago and then who were afterthoughts this entire season. Suddenly they're extraordinarily in demand. So, yeah, that's, when you start talking about big-name quarterbacks and championship teams that suddenly don't look like they could contend next year, that's an unusual free agency period.
Joel Corey is an NFL contract and salary cap writer with the National Football Post and CBS Sports. He's also a former agent. Joel Corey joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Joel, thanks a lot for doing this morning.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I got to ask you, the Broncos, can they match this offer sheet? Or should they match this offer sheet with C.J. Anderson?
The comforting thing is you can find running backs anywhere because they found him as an undrafted free agent.
True.
It's got a first-year cap number, I think, between $5 and $5.5 million, which is going to be tough for them to match. They might be better off trying to find another back, kind of like Seattle found their successor to Marshawn Lynch as an undrafted guy in Thomas Rawls.
Yeah, so that's finding running backs is it's easier than finding starting quarterbacks. And how did they wind up in a position at the end of this magical season for Denver, where the heir apparent to Peyton Manning wound up elsewhere, and now they're out there looking at, kind of reclamation projects in terms of RG3, guys like that, just to be their starting quarterback. Is that, did John Elway miss something here along the way?
Yeah, it looks like he misread the tea leaves. One, you had to show a little bit of deference to Peyton, even though it was very clear that they were cutting the cord with him. They were pushing him out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Osweiler was a little more upset about being benched than he was letting on, because publicly he handled it the right way. And when you draw a line in the sand and you're not going to go above a certain point, you run the risk of losing the guy. The thing which I'm kind of wondering is they saw him every day for 4 years. Is there something that they know about him that nobody else knows about him where they said, you know what, for the extra money, you can go elsewhere. But now they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place for a quarterback because Colin Kaepernick seems to prefer to go to the hapless Browns as opposed to Denver in a trade.
I was gonna ask you about that. I look at Colin Kaepernick and I look at RG3, and the first thing that comes to mind is, I think both of these guys, Joel, they need to go to a place where there's going to be some level of support. People have talked about RG3. A good place for him, for example, would be Kansas City. A coach who can develop quarterbacks. He's not going to have to go in and be the starter right away. But, a good environment, a nurturing environment, an environment where a guy can maybe rebuild his psyche a little bit. And I look at Colin Kaepernick as almost the same way, right? I get he's probably going someplace where he can start and get the money, and maybe in that way he's a little different than RG3. But for his career, wouldn't it make more sense to go to a place with a nurturing environment compared to a place like Cleveland, where which is just a 4 or 5 year train wreck?
Well, Kaepernick's under contract for the next 5 years for $89.2 million. It's team friendly, so you could really cut him after 1 year, and it's a 1 year deal at $14.3 million. So he's going to go start no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Denver would be his best shot because he has proven in the past that if you have a good defense, now then you get a running game, he can win with those two things because he got him to a Super Bowl that way. RG3, I agree. He should probably go someplace where he can learn the craft of being a quarterback, or he runs the risk of being Vince Young and out of the league in 2 years.
Yeah.
And Andy Reid's the perfect guy because he did get Michael Vick for at least 1 year to play in a more conventional manner. And he was an MVP candidate in 2010 and turned that into a franchise tag and a $16 million per year deal. So I think RG3's long-term best bet is someplace like Kansas City. But I wouldn't be surprised with the musical chairs that since Chip Kelly recruited him to go to Oregon, he's in San Francisco once or if Kaepernick is out of San Francisco.
Joel, what is Colin Kaepernick? Because, you know, right now, you know, from this position, he looks like a guy who was a product of the read option when that was in vogue and when people were having trouble dealing with it. And, you know, that once the league figured that out, he wasn't, you know, he was ordinary. He's a, you know, great physical specimen in a lot of ways, but didn't look like he could play the position. What is he?
We don't know. Besides a work in progress, we don't know, because he worked out with Kurt Warner last year, but apparently that didn't do anything for him because he seemed to get worse as opposed to better. So he's kind of take him on at your own peril. Cleveland, I think that's setting him up for failure because he has no weapons besides Gary Barnage. So I think he would be doomed, even though he wants to play for Hugh Jackson. At least in Denver, there's a defense, and they won with below-average quarterback play in Peyton Manning. Because to be honest, Peyton Manning looked like Trent Dilfer when Baltimore won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Joel, you know, when I look at RG3 and Colin Kaepernick, and I compare them to Russell Wilson, you know, three, I know they're not all similar quarterbacks, but three guys who kind of came in when the read option was in vogue. What is it about Russell Wilson that has allowed him to structure his game a little bit away from that? And you know, he's had a little more success kind of getting out of that read option comfort zone. What is it about him that has allowed him to do that? Is a lot of that down to the coaching in Seattle?
Part of that's mindset of the quarterback, because Russell, even when he would take off quickly, he wasn't taking off to run like Kaepernick and Griffin. He was taking off to buy time like he's Fran Tarkenton and looking for receivers. And now that he's made strides in the pocket, he's a pick your poison, damned if you do, damned if you don't guy, because it used to be contain him in the pocket. You don't want him scrambling around trying to make a play to find someone downfield. Now that he started picking people apart in the pocket, you're not really sure what to do with him. Those guys are like light years away from that.
Joel, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
We appreciate you having me.
Take care. It's Joel Corey, NFL contract and salary cap writer for National Football Post and CBS Sports, and a former player agent. You can follow him at Corey Joel. And, just fascinating, really, when you think about it. You know, the read option was going to be the next big thing. I think we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, Russell Wilson has managed to... Yeah. He's the last man standing, basically.
Of those guys.
Of those guys.
Yeah, who we kind of think it was products of that system. Yeah, no, he's the real deal. Kaepernick is an intriguing guy because he's, you know, he's big and he can run and he's got a really good arm.
Yeah.
But, you know, he looks so lost. There might have been other reasons for that in San Francisco. They've had kind of, you know, some coaching chaos there and organizational chaos. Mm-hmm. But he just looked lost. And this is, a guy who was within a hair of winning a Super Bowl. I do think, again, you look at, Joel just explained his contract situation, which is, that he could be a one-and-done cut guy in Cleveland, go give him a year, and then, that money's not guaranteed. It's pretty easy to get rid of guys in the National Football League, and God knows he has, the chances of succeeding as the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. There's a long line of guys who have not succeeded there. I guess since like Bernie Kosar, really. I'm not sure who the last successful Cleveland Browns quarterback. He might be it. But, that's such a terrible organization. You'd wonder why that would be his choice. He's a guy where I think the jury is very much out on him. And RG3, I guess, has to be viewed as kind of a project now, which is weird.
I think, and we had Don Banks on primetime yesterday, and Banks made the same point. I think most people in football look at RG3 and say, if Andy Reid can get it, that's perfect for him because – there's no pressure. You're not going to start. You got Alex Smith there.
Yep.
And you got Andy Reid, that sort of low-risk offense. But you've also got Andy Reid, a guy who develops quarterbacks. He may not be able to take him through the playoffs, but he does develop.
Well, he mostly can't take him through the last minute and a half of a game,
true.
Right? He can't read a clock.
But that would be the type of environment I think I would want for RG3. Kind of a solid ownership, solid management,
yep.
Solid coaching staff.
Alex Smith's got the job, and
exactly.
It's that makes some sense. I would still like to think there's something there because during that brief glorious moment in Washington when it looked like he was redefining the position,
mm-hmm.
he was an exciting guy to watch.
Yeah.
I'd love to think that he could flourish somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. I think the NFL really, 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 the NFL really needs RG3. Corey Hirsch is one of our Hockey Central analysts. the NHL and Sportsnet. A big weekend of NHL hockey ahead on the various Sportsnet.
Scary night last night. Did you
scary night last night. I saw P.K. Subban fall into the boards. And apparently P.K., according to John Shannon, P.K. Subban's been released from hospital. Apparently he may play.
Wow.
Saturday night. It's a...
Hard to imagine. A guy was lying there still for 10 minutes. You know,
and, it's a minor neck injury. Although, you do...
Yeah. They err on the side of caution.
You err on the side of caution with that. But it was, if you had a chance to see the play, his reaction, because PK, when PK's rolling around in the ice and he's throwing his glove, his reaction scared the hell out of me more than the hit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think PK Subban's a guy who's going to roll around the ice an awful lot. And that scared me more than the hit itself. We'll talk to Corey Hirsch about that. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.